Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
So Pesach is coming, so even though it's Parshas Tzav, we're going to skip right through the Parsha and get to some Pesach-related stuff. What I'd like to do is actually use this opportunity. I'm going to do it, be a little bit selfish, I apologize. I'm going to use you to help clarify for me some of the difficult aspects of this whole story. As I mentioned many times, I often don't have a chance to go through them myself, and year after year after year we read them quickly. So we're going to use this class to really learn and study some of the psukim related to the story. We might end up with more questions than we have answers, but that's fine. That's fine. As we go along, I do have a couple things to add along the way, and then we'll just see what comes out. So what I'd like to study is on is the 12th chapter of Sefer Shmos, Book of Exodus, chapter 12, which really begins the story of the Exodus. Now, the story of Egypt has been going on for a while. Chapter 12 opens in between plagues numbers 9 and 10. So we're deep into the story. We are not picking up from the very beginning of the story. We are going to be focused where we're going to be studying. It's on page 348, if I could find the place. We've already been through nine plagues already, and Paro has been warned of the impending 10th plague, the death of the firstborn. That's what has already taken place as we begin this chapter. Now, before we begin the chapter, what I want to do is read this one little section from the Haggadah, which I have photocopied for you. This is a section which you are for sure familiar with. It's one of the fundamental aspects of the Haggadah. The Haggadah itself says that there are three things that need to be said in order to fulfill one's obligation. The Pesach, the Matzah, and the Maror, which we go through what the three things are. And this is the that selection. Matzah zu she'anu ochlim al shum ma. The matzah. Why do we eat this unleavened bread? So the Haggadah has us asking a question which we ourselves would always ask, except that we are familiar with the answer. Why are we eating this matzah on Pesach? What is the reason for this? What does it symbolize? What is it supposed to do? What is it telling us? What does it say to us? It's an important question, huh? Sitting here at the Seder, eating our matzah, and the Haggadah begs us to ask the question, why? The Haggadah answers as follows: Al shum shelo hispik bitzekom shelavoseinu lehachmitz ad shenigla alayim melech malcheyam lochim hakadosh baruch hu go'olam. How does the Haggadah answer this question? Because the dough of our fathers did not have time to become leavened before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed is He, revealed Himself to them and redeemed them. All right, let's take a second and read that. That's the English of the Haggadah. What does that mean to you? If you're speaking over to a 10-year-old at your Seder table and they ask, why are we eating matzah? How would you answer based on this Haggadah's answer? What happened?
We're in a rush.
We were in a rush. Good. Why were we in a rush? Just based on this line, not based on other information. Why are we in a rush?
Hashem told us.
Doesn't say that. First line that I just read. Why are we eating? Why were we in a rush?
Because we were driven out.
No, you're reading too much.
Oh.
I gave a class similar to this, and I had the same problem. Everybody knows so much information before they sit down. It's hard to separate out that which is being said and that which you already know. I read this paragraph contains two parts. Three parts, really. The question. The Haggadah asks a question. Why do we eat matzah? The Haggadah gives an answer, and then the Haggadah backs its answer up with a verse. Proves its answer. We haven't even read the verse yet. I just want to read through the answer of the Haggadah. Why do we eat this unleavened bread? And the Haggadah gives an answer. And I ask, you're sitting with a 10-year-old at your table, and the child asks a question. Why are we eating matzah? What would you answer the child based on the Haggadah's answer?
I mean, the part where it says Hashem revealed Himself and said we have to, we gotta move.
Okay, so he revealed Himself. The answer to the question, why are we in a rush? Because Hashem revealed Himself and did what to us? What does it say?
Redeemed.
And redeemed them. Right, which is what you're referring to when you say, we gotta move. Right, in other words, so if what precipitated us being in a rush? What actually happened according to the Haggadah?
I guess the revelation and the redemption.
Excellent. Right? That's what happened. The revelation. He revealed himself. The Haggadah asks the question, why are we eating matzah? Haggadah answers, because Hashem revealed himself to us and redeemed us. Right? So far so good, that's what the Haggadah says. So if we were to then stop and ask the question and say, in what way or at what point in the Haggadah story was there this revelation? There was clearly a revelation which took place which caused us to be in a rush. He revealed himself, redeemed us, we needed to move. What would that be? So the Haggadah doesn't tell us itself. What would we guess?
What was the revelation?
Yeah.
I mean, you say the 10th plague was one of them. I mean,
okay, 10th plague. We would have to find something where there was a moment of revelation. That's what the Haggadah seems to be saying. He revealed himself and redeemed us, and therefore we were in a rush. Okay, what verse does the Haggadah bring to prove that this is in fact the reason why we eat matzah? What verse is brought? They baked the dough which they had brought out of Egypt into unleavened bread, for it had not fermented, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not delay, nor had they prepared any provisions for the way. Now we're going to look at this verse in context, but what the verse is saying, as the Haggadah is bringing it to prove, is that they baked dough into unleavened bread, because apparently the dough that they had did not have a chance to ferment. It had not become leavened. And why was it that the dough that they had did not ferment? Because they were driven out of Egypt and could not delay. If you had only this passage in front of you, what would you say drove them out of Egypt and was the reason why they could not delay? What is the Haggadah trying to prove from this verse? Maybe too analytical, too Talmudic. What was the original line of the Haggadah? Why are we eating matzah?
It was revelation and redemption.
Correct. There was a revelation, and because he revealed himself and redeemed us, we were in a rush. What verse, where did you find a proof to that in this pasuk? Seems like because Ki gershu mi Mitzrayim, they were driven out of Egypt. So what's driving them out of Egypt? Now it's not stated, it would seem like it must be the... some form of a revelation must have driven them out of Egypt, and therefore it's a proof to what the Haggadah is trying to say, that why are we eating matzah? Because Hashem revealed himself and redeemed us, so we didn't have chance to bake bread. As the verse says, they baked dough, it had not fermented because they were driven out of Egypt. This is very confusing? No? So far so good? Okay. Let's actually learn the story. Let's see what happens when we read the psukim inside and just see what comes out of this story. Again, what the background in our minds is the question of, why are we eating matzah? What's the reason? The Haggadah begs us to ask this question. The Haggadah says, why are we eating? And the Haggadah says, well, Hashem revealed himself and redeemed us, and that's why we're eating matzah. Okay, ready? So let's start. Page 348. You can look in your packet. The truth is, the packets are the same as the Chumash. It depends on whatever you want to look. It's all the same. Doesn't matter. The packets will just give you some focus on some of the underlying parts. But it really doesn't make a difference. Okay. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aharon ve'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. Again, we are now in between plagues numbers 9 and 10. The warning has already been given for plagues number 20. And Hashem says to Moshe and Aaron, saying, HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshim. We're going to go through this part quickly. This month, it's the day of Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month of Nisan, is Rosh Chodesh, the first of the months of the year for you. Dabruel kol adas Yisrael leimor be'esor lachodesh hazev yikchu lohem ish set leveis avos set laboyes. Speak to the people of Israel. So again, Moshe, Hashem is now speaking only to Moshe and to Aaron. And he tells them that they should speak to the people of the Jewish people, all of them, that on the 10th of the month, so he's giving them already warning, on Rosh Chodesh this message is being given to Moshe and to Aaron, that they should tell the people that on the 10th of the month, they should each take an animal, either a lamb or a goat, per household. What should they do? And if you have not enough people, then you should join together with a neighbor. Verse 5, again, this part is not relevant to us, an unblemished lamb or a kid, then its first year, it shall be yours for examination until the 14th day of the month. The entire congregation of the assembly of Israel shall slaughter in the afternoon. Okay, basically, on the 10th of the month, they're told to take the animal. They're supposed to examine it for 4 days to make sure that it doesn't have any blemishes which would disqualify it. 4 days they hold on to the animal, 4 days they examine it, and then on the afternoon of the 14th, the 14th of Nisan, which is for us Erev Pesach, the afternoon before we'll sit down at the Seder, that afternoon they slaughter it. Verse 7, Zion, V'lakchu min adam v'nasnu al shteya min zuzos v'yala mashkov. They then take some of its blood and place it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses in which they will eat it. Here they are told then to take from the blood, put it on the post, put it on the lintel on top, and that's what they are to do with this animal. Now, verse Ches, underline, they shall eat it. V'ochlu es ha-basar balayla hazeh. Then that night, again, now the 14th in the afternoon, they're supposed to take it and slaughter it. Put the blood on the posts and up on the mashkof, up on the lintel above the posts. That later that night, they're supposed to eat the flesh of this slaughtered animal. Tzli'esh u'matzos al miroirim yochluhu. And what are they supposed to eat it with?
Matzah.
And?
Bitter.
Marr. Excellent. Now, where are the Jews at this point? Physically, where are they?
Still in Egypt.
Right, they're in their homes. They're in their homes in Egypt. They're being told about this when?
A few weeks in advance.
Correct. 2 weeks in advance on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, on the 1st of Nisan, Moshe and Aaron get the command from Hashem, which they are then going to convey to the Jewish people, that 10 days from now, on the 10th of the month, you're going to take an animal, you're going to examine it for 4 days, you're going to slaughter it on the 14th, and be ready to eat it that night on the 15th. And what are you going to be eating it with? Matzah and mar. So what are you busy doing for those next 2 weeks? You're going to get your matzah and mar ready, or at least those last 4 days, because you know there's been a direct commandment from Hashem that you're going to be eating with matzah and mar. If I ask the Jews, why are you eating this lamb or kid with matzah and mar on this night? What would the Jews of Egypt say about the very first Pesach offering ever? Why are they eating it with matzah and murr? How would they answer their 10-year-old's question when their 10-year-old says, "Hey, Dad, why are we eating this lamb with matzah and murr?" What would they answer?
Hashem told Moshe and Moshe told us.
Probably something exactly along those lines. They would say, well, you see, kid, over the last year there have been all sorts of wacky things happening in Egypt. Remember when the water turned to blood, when God said it was going to, exactly when He said and for how long He said? Yeah. And then remember the frogs and the what? Well, when God says something is going to happen and He commands Moshe, we listen. It would be something along those lines. Why are we eating marr? Well, Rashi comments, well, marr was bitter. That would certainly symbolize to them the bitter experience that they had. If you had to, if you pressed them for something deeper about the matzah, they might say, it's the poor man's bread. This is the kind of food we've been eating. I'm not sure what they would say. But it would probably focus on, well, that's what Hashem said for us to do. This is how He wants us to eat. Where are they eating it? In Egypt. Have they left yet? No, they're sitting there that night in their homes. Have the firstborn of the Egyptians died yet? No, when does that happen?
After this.
Midnight of that night. So they're sitting in their home after nightfall, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I don't know. They're eating their freshly slaughtered animal. They got blood on their doorposts, blood on the lintel. And they're eating with matzah and murr this meat during that night prior to the death of the firstborn. So far, so good? Okay, continues the Chumash, giving us a few more details about what the night is supposed to look like. Al tochlu mimenu na. You're not allowed to eat it partially roasted. Now we have details about the roasting of this animal. It's not permitted to be partially roasted. It has to be entirely fully cooked. No rare. Anyone who liked rare meats, not sure how well a refined palate the Jews of Egypt had after 210 years of slavery, but if anyone so desired rare, not permitted. You're not allowed to eat it partially rare, mevushol, uvashel mevushol b'mayim, nor are you allowed to cook it in water. Ki im tzli esh, it must be entirely roasted. Rosho al kra'ov al kirbo, its legs, its innards, everything whole, fully roasted. One more law, velo sosiru mimenu ad boker. Now another detail, as you're sitting in your home with a blood on your posts, eating with matzah and more of the meat, you must polish it off. You are not permitted to have any of this meat left over till the morning. And if anything is left, you have to burn it. So that's the commandment that they're given in advance of how they are to eat this meat. We'll have one more in a moment. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, the reason for all of these laws is that these are the way of kings to eat. Kings do not eat cooked meat. Cooked meat is nowhere near as a delicacy as roasted meat. So kings eat roasted meat, and they don't have leftovers either. Kings don't eat leftovers. Every meal is freshly cooked. So you're not permitted to leave anything over, because leftover is the rest of us. We eat leftovers all the time. If there'd be no such thing as leftovers, we wouldn't eat. So we like leftovers. So leftovers are fine, but a king always has fresh meat. So no leftovers. I don't even want you to have in your mind, I'm going to put some of this away. No. Tonight you eat like royalty. No leftovers. It must be roasted, not fully roasted. No cooking. That's how you eat. One more. Yud Aleph. V'kacha toichlu oso. Now they're giving more details as to how they're supposed to eat. Masnechem chagurim. Your loins shall be girded. If anyone knows exactly what that means, I'd love to hear. But it clearly has something to do with being ready to leave. Like your bags are packed, your belts are on, I'm not, whatever exactly it means that your loins are girded. Na'alechem b'raglechem, you must eat with shoes on your feet. Fascinating law. I mean, we don't even pay attention. Most of the time we eat with shoes on our feet anyway. But you are not permitted to eat without your shoes on your feet. Umalkechem b'yetchem, your staff in your hand. So your table, again, you're in Egypt. You're expecting the plague of the deathborn of the death of the firstborn later that night. You have a freshly roasted meal. You're eating it with matzah and maror. You're eating it with your staff in your hand, your shoes on your feet, your belts all ready to go. V'ochaltem oso b'chipazon. And then you have to eat it in great haste. So you're sitting at the table eating it in haste. Pesach hu l'Hashem. This is a Pesach offering to Hashem. If I ask the Jews, why are you eating this in great haste? What would they answer? Now, if I asked a Jew the second or third year after Egypt, why are you eating in great haste? They might remember how quickly they left. But the Jews that I'm asking to have not left yet. They're in Egypt still. And they're told to eat it in great haste. And if I asked them why, what would they answer me?
Because we were told so.
Not probably. I mean, maybe they would say, maybe we're getting ready to leave. Unclear if they knew that they were getting ready to leave so soon. At this point, at least. Haven't been told so, but they're told to eat staff in hand, shoes on their feet, belts are all ready to go, and they eat it in great haste. It's a Pesach hu l'Hashem. Rashi explains, why is this sacrifice called a Pesach? So Rashi says the language of Pesach, al shem hadilug v'hapsicha. Psicha, the root of the word Pesach, Rashi says, is like jumping or skipping. Shakolish Borchu Middaleg Bote Yisrael mi bein Bote Mitzrayim, that Hashem, so to speak, skipped over the houses of the Jews as he was going through house by house the houses of the Egyptians. The Koifates mi Mitzri le Mitzri, he would jump from one Egyptian to another Egyptian, vi Yisrael and Soi Nimlat, and the Jew in the middle would be saved. And you, the lesson is, says Rashi, Osu kola vodosov l'shem shamayim. All of your behaviors and actions need to be for the sake of heaven, in the same jumping and skipping way that Hashem did to us, with a lightness in your foot, jumping and skipping to do the will of Hashem. So that's what the lesson derived to us from the fact that it's called a Pesach l'Hashem, because Hashem poseach skipped over us. And we need to learn from that. That means that trait of sort of being light-footed and skipping around and jumping in our service of Hashem. Fine, let's go on. I'm going to pass over the land of Mitzrayim on this night. I will smite and strike down every firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim, man and animal. And the blood, 13, the blood will be a sign for you upon the houses where you are. When I see the blood, I shall pass over you. There shall not be a plague of destruction upon you when I strike in the land of Egypt. So this is all told to the Jews that are later that night. So there are really two separate things going on. Number one is they're eating of this sacrifice with their matzah and with their maror. And number two, the blood on their doorpost is going to be a sign that later that night at midnight when Hashem passes through the land of Mitzrayim, that they will not be affected by that. Only the land of, only the Egyptians will be. Why do they need a sign, says Rashi? Did Hashem not know which houses were Jewish houses and which houses were non-Jewish houses, Egyptian homes? Why does he need a sign? This will be for you a sign. Rashi says, on the second column, if you want to follow it inside, four lines down, I will see the blood. Says Rashi, Hakol goli lefanav. Everything is revealed before God. I mean, he needs to see, he'll see the dam, and now he'll know that you're a Jewish home. He didn't know without that. Allah Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no seinani es einai, I'm going to see, I'm going to place my eyes, liros, shatem asukim b'mitzvosai. I'm not looking to see blood to know whether or not there is a Jewish home here or not. I'm looking to see blood as a sign that you are busy with my commandments. I want to see whether or not you fulfill that which I'm asking you to do, so that the blood represents far more than a sign that says, herein lies a Jew. No. God knows that without you. The blood is a sign that says, I am part of your people. I am listening to that which you ask me to do. Look, I have done that which I'm commanded. I am one of yours. That, says Rashi, is the reason for the blood. Okay, so far so good. Yudalit 14. Vehayo hayoim azeh lochem lazikaron. This day shall become a remembrance for you. Vechagoisem oso chag lahashem lidorosechem. You shall celebrate it as a festival for Hashem for your generations. Again, when is this being told to the Jewish people?
Before they leave Egypt.
Excellent. What day before they leave Egypt? This is told on Rosh Chodesh, presumably, on the first of the month. They are told, A, that on the 10th of that month they're going to take this animal, they're going to examine it for 4 days, eventually slaughter it, and eat it on the afternoon, on the night of the 14th. They're going to eat it with their matzah and their myrrh. Then they are told, still 2 weeks in advance, that this day will become a holiday. What kind of holiday? Chukas Olam Tuchagu, you shall eternally celebrate this holiday, on this day. Shivas Yomim, for a 7 day period. Matzos Toichelu, you shall eat matzos. I'm going to belabor this point because that's what I'm here for. When are they being told that there will be an eternal 7 day holiday that they will eat matzah?
Before they ever leave
Thank
Egypt.
You so much. Excellent, right? They're still 2 weeks before they left, and they're being told that there will be an eternal 7 day holiday before they leave, during which time they will eat matzos. Ach bayom arishon tashpisu s'or mibateichem. However, on the previous day you shall get rid of and destroy any chametz in your homes. That's what we do on the 14th, is we destroy all of our chametz. Ki chol oichel chametz v'nichrasa ha'nefesh ahim Yisrael. And this is severe. Anyone who eats chametz, their soul shall be cut off from the Jewish people. Miyom harishon ad yom hashvi. From the first day to the seventh day, only matzah, no chametz. Punishable by being totally cut off. So this is a significant law, significant holiday. When we say that a soul will be cut off from amongst the Jewish people, we are saying you cannot be part of the Jewish people if you exhibit this behavior. That's what we mean to say. You can't. Jewish people requires X, you want to be part of us? Great. If you do Y, then you're not part of us. Now, you're a Jew in Egypt before you've left. You've just been told a very significant law, that there will be an eternal holiday of 7 days during which you'll eat matzah. And if I were to ask you, why are you eating matzah for 7 days for all of eternity? Your answer would be? Right? I mean, you have nothing else to go with. I don't know. Why? No one told me anything else. But I know that it's significant too, because if I don't do this, I'm not part of the Jewish people. I can't be part of. If I eat chametz during this seven day eternal holiday, I'm not part of the Jewish people. 16 Torah describes the first day is going to be a yontiv, the seventh day is going to be a yontiv, and this is what we know we do today. We have the first days and the second days, and Chutz La'aretz, outside the land of Israel, we have 2 days in the beginning and 2 days in the end. Really, it's just supposed to be one in the beginning and one in the end. We should all go back to Eretz Yisrael and live it as it is supposed to be lived. 17 Ushmartem es hamatzos, guard the matzos, ki be'etzem hayoyim hazeh hoitzesi es tzivoyseichem me'eretz Mitzrayim. Guard these matzos, because on this day I will have taken your legions out of the land of Egypt. Oh, now the Jews get excited. Ooh, now they hear what's coming. We are leaving because we're getting out of here. We got a holiday coming, because tonight, the day of the 14th, we slaughter. We prepare our matzah, we prepare our mar. Nightfall of the 15th, we eat. And we're going to make it into a yontif, because sometime soon, apparently sometime during that day, we are going to be leaving. You shall observe this day for your generations as an eternal decree. On the first day, the 14th month of the day, in the evening, you shall eat matzahs until the 21st day of the month of the evening. It is explicit. For all time on this night, you shall eat matzah. Do I need to ask the question one more time? If I were to ask the Jews, why are you eating matzah on the first day of this month every year for all of eternity? You would say, and that's what it says. Hashem told me that's what we're going to make a holiday. Okay, so far so good. The Chumash continues, where now Moshe actually then transfers this message. This message has so far been given directly from Hashem to Moshe and to Aaron. At this point, he then continues and gives it over to the Jewish people, tells them about the Korban Pesach, what they're going to do with the blood on the posts. Okay, verse 29. Or we could even start verse 28. The children of Israel went and did as Hashem commanded Moshe and Aaron. So did they do. They went, which means they took all the animals. That night they slaughtered it. They slaughtered during the day. And that night they ate it together with their matzah and their maror. Okay, 29. Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. So now it's midnight. Where are all the Jews at this time?
In their home.
What are they doing?
Eating
the Korban Pesach with their matzah and with their maror. They got their shoes on their feet, they got their staff in their hands, and they got their loins girded. It's now chatzi halayla. It's now midnight. Vashem hika kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem strikes down all of the Egyptian firstborn, mi b'chor paro ayoshev al kiso, from the firstborn of paro until the firstborn of the captive in the depths of the dungeon, v'chol b'chor b'heima, as well as all the firstborns of the animals. Vayakom paro laila hu v'chol avadov v'chol Mitzrayim. And paro wakes up at midnight, he and all of his servants and all of Egypt. Now, I personally do not know exactly how to read this verse. Vayakom paro, did that mean that paro rose up from his sleep? Was he sleeping? So, I don't know. Now, if he was, he's been warned about this. He was warned about this. It's not in your photocopy, but it's in your Chumash on page 346. Verse 4 on page 346, Vayomer Moshe, Ko Amar Hashem, Kachatzos Halayla, Niyotze B'Soich Mitzrayim. At around midnight, I am going to go out in the midst of Egypt. Umeis Kol Bechor, V'Eretz Mitzrayim, Yibachor Paro, Hayoshev Al Kisoad Bechor Ashivcha, Asher Acher Harichoyim, V'Chol Bechor Behema. From the firstborn of Paro sits on his throne, to the maidservant who is behind the millstone, and all the firstborn of the beast. Did Paro go to sleep that night? You think he went to sleep? It's the 10th plague. He's seen every single one of the first 9 happen exactly as Moshe said it would happen. Moshe has now told him, at midnight, your firstborn is going to die. Now, did Paro know which night at midnight? I don't know. I don't know. Somehow it seems like Paro went to sleep. So I don't know. I don't know which way to say it. I don't know if the pshat is he knew and he didn't care and he went to sleep, or Or he didn't believe, meaning he just didn't believe. I mean, despite all that's gone on, he simply didn't believe. Or if he didn't know which night it was going to be. I don't know, but it's bizarre. It seems to me that Paro actually went to sleep. Paro now the other question that's interesting to me is that how did he know that his firstborn had died? Because if a person dies in their sleep, so by this plague, was it like clear to everybody that they were dying? I don't know what happened, but apparently it became clear that Hashem had done that which he had said he would do, and that all the firstborns would die. Paro is now awake. Vayakom Paro laylohu v'chol avado v'chol Mitzrayim. Everybody's awake. The entire nation of Egypt is awake at midnight. How does that Israeli song go? Paro b'pajama b'emtza halayla. Paro's in his pajamas in the middle of the night, and he's vatitzaako g'dayla b'mitzrayim. There's a great outcry in the land of Egypt. Ki ein bayis asher ein shomeis. There's not a single home that does not have a dead person in it. Vayikra l'moish oli Aaron layla. In the middle of the night, he's calling for Moshe and Aaron. Kumu tzu mitoich ami. Get up. Get out of my nation, he says. Kamatem, you, Bnei Yisrael, the nation of Israel, luchu evdu as Hashem kedabrachem. Go serve God like you said you wanted to. Get out of my land. Continues Paro. Gam tzoinchem, gam bekarchem. You know, take your sheep, take your cattle. Chu kasher dibartem, take them as you have spoken. Volechu uveirachtem gamosi, get out of here, but bless me as well. Says Rashi, what do you mean bless me as well? Rashi says, his palalu alai shelo amos, pray for me that I don't die, because I'm also a firstborn. So Hashem actually spared Paro. Paro was the one firstborn in the entire land of Egypt that had not been killed. He is now saying to Moshe, get out of here, but pray for me on your way out that I don't get hit on you as the back door swings closed on your way out, that I don't get it. Okay, now here's our two key verses. Lamed Gimel 33, Vatechezak Mitzrayim al Ha'om Limaher Lishalchom Min Ha'aretz. Egypt imposed itself strongly upon the people to hasten to send them out of the land, for they said, we are all dying. So Rashi explains, the Egyptians were massively confused at this point, because they knew that all the firstborns were supposed to die, but it didn't seem that way, because lots of people were dying. As Rashi explains, it was the firstborn either from a mother or the firstborn from a father. So a woman might have mothered several firstborns from several different men who were all their firstborns, even though it wasn't her firstborn, and they all died. And all of a sudden it was becoming clear who exactly was promiscuous with who and when. And I thought, and all people are dying, and if a house didn't have a firstborn, the oldest in the house died. So the Egyptians thought everything was going to pot. Everybody was dying. So they imposed themselves strongly on the Jewish people. Limaher lishalchum. To hasten and send them out of the land. So at this moment, the Jews, it's midnight, setting up the scene. What are the Jews doing? They're sitting and eating their meal, their matzah, their mar, their staffs in their hand, their shoes on their feet. And their doors are being banged down by whom? The Egyptians saying, get the heck out of our lands. Get out now. I don't want to leave. The Egyptians banging down their doors, getting them out. So the people took their dough before they had a chance to allow it to ferment. Their leftovers bound up in their garments upon their shoulders. What does this verse mean? What dough are they talking about? What do you mean they picked up their dough before it could become leavened? And they have leftovers. What are their leftovers from? Yeah, no? What are the leftovers from?
Matzah and mar.
Right, it sounded like the meal. In other words, they just had a meal. They had this big sacrifice, which they weren't allowed to leave anything over for the morning, so they got to get that all done. And they got matzah and they got mar. And apparently they had leftovers. So they packed it up quickly in their bags and threw it over their shoulders. And what else did they take with them? They took with them dough. Had the dough had a chance to ferment and to rise? No. Why not? Why has the dough not fermented? Why has the dough not risen?
Because they
were supposed to be leaving in haste.
Well, were they told to leave in haste?
Well, according to the Egyptians, they said, get out and go.
Good. So in other words, so what's forcing them out without giving them chance to allow their dough to rise? How would you, if we just stopped here, I would say, why has the Jewish dough not risen?
The Egyptians pushed them away.
Correct. That's what the pasuk would say. That's how Rashi reads the pasuk. Now that I'm actually taking sides, that's how Rashi reads this pasuk. Vayisoha omes betzeko. The people picked up its dough before it could become leavened, because this is a follow-up of the previous verse of Egypt imposing itself strongly upon the people to hasten to send them out. So the direct cause of the haste, the direct cause of the great quickness with which the Jewish people left, is the Egyptians at their door kicking them out. The reason why our dough did not have a chance to rise is because we were not expecting to leave right now. I didn't let my dough rise. Apparently the dough rising was a process which took some time to do. And they hadn't allowed that to happen. They had dough. Now, dough doesn't rise naturally on its own. In order for dough to rise, put aside the way that we observe Pesach today with all of its stringencies. In order for dough to rise, you need a leavening agent, either in the form of yeast or what they would call seor, was some type of leavening product that they would add to the dough, and that would cause it to rise. If you go home today and you take flour and water, mix it together in dough, and put it on your kitchen table, what's going to happen to it? Nothing. Actually, it's not going to rise.
Yeast.
Right? If you don't add yeast, you do not have the light, fluffy, delicious challah that we have. The dough just doesn't rise. It's just going to remain a clump of dough.
I don't know if it makes any difference, but you also have to have some type of heat or warmth.
Excellent. Right? You need heat, warmth, and a leavening agent in order. Now, if you just put flour and water and you left it in a hot place, I think over enough time it will rise a little, but you're not to a baker's bread. So they had their dough ready, but they hadn't yet added a yeast or leavening product. According to the texts, according to the way Rashi reads it, why have they not had a chance to, they didn't think they were leaving. And what's not allowing them to do it now? The Egyptians at the door are physically breaking down their homes, picking them up, and carrying them out. Now, it works out well that the Jews happen to be eating with their shoes on their feet, their staffs in their hand, their loins are girded, and in that sense, they're ready to go. But they did not get their bread ready yet. They did not add the leavening agent, and they were kicked out. Yeah.
At this point, were the doors marked yet?
Yes. Yes.
So it also made it easy for the
Egyptians to identify the Jews. That's correct. That's an excellent point. I never thought of that before. That's an excellent point. That, in other words, this aspect is a critical aspect of the story. That what kicked us out, what finally kicked us out, it was the Egyptians who physically came in and kicked us out. Although, I have a proof against what you're saying. Rashi writes, I'm glad, that's a great point. But Rashi says not that way. When they were told to put the blood on the posts, the Torah says, "V'hayolochem le'os," it shall be for you a sign. And Rashi says, for you a sign, but not for anybody else a sign. From here we learn that the blood went on the inside of the homes and not on the outside of the homes. But otherwise that would have been a great thought. But Rashi specifically says, from the way the Torah says, it shall be for you a sign. It's specifically coming to say, not that way. It's not a sign for the Egyptians. It's only a sign for you. So I guess they just knew where the Jewish homes were. Okay, let's do a couple more verses. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael, lot 35, Lamed Hei. U'v'nei Yisrael asu kidvar Moshe vayish'alu mi Mitzrayim klei chesef uklei zov u'smalos. So now the Jewish people say, wait a minute, Moshe told us that when we leave, we need to borrow all of your stuff. So you're kicking us out, but before you do so, do you have any gold or silver that maybe I can have? So the Jewish people carried out the word of Moshe. They requested from the Egyptians silver vessels and gold vessels and garments. And Hashem gave the people favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they granted their request, so they emptied Egypt. So, as the Egyptians are banging down their door saying, get out of here, the Jews say, yeah, just one thing. Do you have any gold plates? I really like a set of gold dishes. So the Egyptians say, yeah. And they run back to their home, take all of their stuff, give it to the Jews, and say, get out. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael me Ramses Sukkosa. The Jewish people now leave Ramses, and they go to Sukkos. Sheish me'osh elef ragle ha'gvorim levad mitaf. 600,000 people leave Ramses and head to the place called Sukkos. V'gam erev rav olo itam, a mixed multitude, meaning Egyptians who wanted to join the Jewish people, left with them. And flock and cattle and livestock. Now the Torah tells us in verse 39, "Vayofu es habotzeik asher hotziu mi Mitzrayim ugos matzos ki lo chometz." They baked the dough that they took out of Egypt. Remember, they left right, a couple verses ago when the Egyptians banged down their door. They grabbed their dough, which had not leavened. Now they get to Sukkos. What do they do in Sukkos? They bake the dough that they took out of Egypt into unleavened cakes. Why do they have to bake this dough into flat unleavened cakes and not let it become bread? For they could not be leavened. Why could they not be leavened? For they were driven from Egypt, for they could not delay. Because back in Egypt, they didn't have a time to go through that process. Apparently they did not even have time to grab the leavening agents that they would need. So now they find themselves in Sukkos with dough that had not had time to go through the process to leaven. So they baked it into matzos. Nor had they made provisions for themselves. And the Torah tells us how long they spent in Egypt, 430 years. Fascinating, huh? Okay, I ask the question one more time. Why are the Jewish people eating matzah? How would you answer that question now?
Because we're being commanded.
Right? So let's, all right, I mean, when you learn through the story, what we get is, while they are in Egypt, they were commanded 2 weeks before they left that they were to eat that last night. Their last supper, if you will, in Egypt was going to be with matzah and maror and a korban pesach. They were going to leave shortly thereafter, which they do. That day, they're told this in advance, that day will become the start of a 7-day holiday, during which time they will only be permitted to eat matzah and not have any chametz. They would otherwise have been baking bread, because after that last meal, that was the only requirement that they had not to eat chametz. So it was just that one meal had to be with matzah. They would have otherwise prepared bread for their trip for the next 7 days, or however long it would take them when they went off into the desert. But they didn't have a chance to prepare the bread. So they ended up baking matzah, which happened to coincide with the holiday which they had been told about, during which they would eat matzah. Odd, huh? Why does the Haggadah tell us we're eating matzah during this Yom Tov of Pesach?
The revelation and redemption.
Because Hashem revealed Himself and redeemed us, and therefore we eat matzah. And it quotes the verse which we just concluded with, they baked the dough that they took out of Egypt into unleavened cakes, for they could not be leavened, for they were driven from Egypt. Now, what that phrase, they were driven from Egypt. Who drove us from Egypt?
The Egyptians.
The Egyptians. Why did we not have bread? They didn't allow us to. Does that or does that not fit what the Haggadah says is a manifestation of Hashem revealing Himself and redeeming us? I mean, it could, right? I mean, it's not a perfect parallel, but what we're seeing is that the Haggadah is saying when the Egyptians forced us, this is the equation that's now been set up. When the Egyptians forced us out, came into our homes, and made us leave, that was Hashem revealing Himself and redeeming Himself, redeeming us. Now, it's not a stretch, but it's not a perfect parallel. I would have thought Hashem revealing Himself would have been something more along the lines of the actual death of the firstborn. But that's not what kicked us out of Egypt. Not when they, I mean, it's linked, obviously, but when they died, they actually thought they were going to continue dying, and that's why they came and kicked us out. So it's not really the revelation of the death of the firstborn, it's their fear of what's going to come next pounds down our door and kicks us out. Yet, out of all of the miraculous events, when the Haggadah says Hashem revealed himself, what is the Haggadah saying is a manifestation of Hashem revealing himself? The Egyptian knocking on my door, kicking me out. I'm sort of asking this as a question. Is it clear what I'm setting up here?
Yeah. I was thinking more that he's revealing the pasuk you had said, that he already told us it's going to be a 7-day period. He's revealing that 7-day period now, too. That's the revelation.
Revealing himself? Remember the language of the Haggadah. It's a strong language. There's no time to become leavened before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed is he, revealed himself to them. This seems to be some massive revelation of Hashem's presence that happened and we didn't have time. But really what happened is that the Egyptians pounded down our door and knocked us out. And the God is equating that, saying that must be the revelation of Hashem. Where do we see the Egyptian pounding down our door as the revelation of Hashem? Am I clear on the question? Where the textual problem is here? It's a little bit tricky, but I'm hoping I made that clear. Let me give you an answer because I'm running out of time and I want to get this and I'll bleed out to take that. This is how the Maharal understands this problem, or finds a solution to this problem. It's brilliant. I hope I'll say it over with just an ounce of the brilliance with which he writes it, which is always hard to say over. Throughout history, there have been people who have been oppressed. People who have been oppressed throughout history have eventually no longer been oppressed, and they become free. In those moments, there is a natural course of history where the oppressed are either rebelled against or decide to stop oppressing, and that's sort of like a natural thing. It's a mikra. It happens. Go throughout history. There have been, every generation has thousands of people who are oppressed. So if you fast forward 5, 10 generations in history, they're no longer being oppressed. And you say, what happened? So sometimes you can trace it back to a specific event, or they rebelled. Sometimes you can say, well, the nation that was oppressing them fell apart. They were a superpower, and they lost some war. And when they lost the war, it triggered a series of events where their economy fell apart. And then when they fell apart, it wasn't so hard for the oppressed people to say, we don't need this anymore. You don't have the ability to oppress us. Maybe they were conquered. Who knows? But it's a natural course of events. What does Hashem promise us? I am going to take you out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and you will see my greatness as I take you out. So says the Maharal, so Hashem had the following problem to deal with. He needed to take out the Jewish people, but it needed to be in a way that it would be clear he's taking us out, and not that the Egyptians are letting us go because they've been decimated, or because their economy fell apart, or because we rebelled against them, or any of those other factors. Because then it wouldn't be his mighty hand and his outstretched arm. So the National Enquirer, the Egyptian Gazette, writing the write-up the following morning, it would be easily explained what happened. This is what happened, why the Jews left. So how does Hashem do it that the way that we leave is clear, that it's his mighty hand and outstretched arm that's taking us out? He took us out against the Jewish people's will. They didn't want to leave. If you would have stopped, if you were a reporter and you would have seen a Jew being thrown out of his house at 12:05 a.m. on the night of the 15th, and you would have said, Mr. Jew, what's going on? He'd say, I didn't finish preparing. I need my food. I got my family and my kids, and I didn't have time to even bake bread. Can you just give me 4 more hours? I just need a little bit more time to get ready. And what would you see? An Egyptian picking him up by his shirt collar, saying, get out now. I don't care that you want to stay. I want you out. So Hashem told us 2 weeks in advance, there's going to be a holiday that's going to be a 7-day holiday of matzah, because you left with great haste, and it's going to be a revelation of me that's causing your haste. How does that manifest itself, that it's my revealing myself? I am going to orchestrate that the Egyptians throw you out against your will. You don't want to leave. You don't have a prohibition of chametz on that night. You only have to eat matzah that one day, and now you're ready to go. I'm going to throw you out against your will to show that I am taking you out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, that the Egyptian people are going to carry you out. You're going to be screaming. You're going to be kicking and screaming, I'm not ready to go. Out. Because I'm going to reveal myself in such a way, with such speed. Says the Maral, Hashem used the Egyptians to reveal himself, that it wasn't just a natural course of events. It wasn't just that something happened, they left. I am going to use them to pick you up and take you out against your will to show my revelation that it's time to leave. Therefore, the Haggadah says, even though we knew about it, he told us 2 weeks in advance what was going to happen, and it still was against their will. We still weren't ready. Because the haste in which it happened, 12 o'clock, the Egyptians are dead, 12:05, they're pulling us out of our homes. I revealed myself, as the Haggadah says, because the King of Kings revealed himself, as the verse said, it had not forbidden, because they were driven out of Egypt. The Egyptians drove us out of Egypt, and yes, that is the parallel to Hashem revealed himself and took us out of Egypt with great haste, and therefore we eat matzah for 7 days. Yes, he told us in advance. He told us what would happen, knowing what would happen in advance, as that was going to be the way in which he would reveal himself, getting us out. That's the Maral's approach on understanding these verses. Beautiful, I think. Yes?
Well, it went where I was going to ask you, but when you use the term, the mass. So, we were living in times where there were no computers, no telephones, no nothing. How was this information delivered to this mass number of people? I don't know if there's a way to even answer how something like
which
that
information
take place. That we're getting out, that we have
that's,
to leave.
That's it. No, that's exactly it. In other words, you're adding to it. In other words, how did that happen? There was no mass email that went out. Every Egyptian saw a dead body in his house, was afraid of his own life, went next door, and simultaneously picked the Jew out of his house and said, "Get out!" So there was no call. God revealed himself and said, I'm going to take out a nation of 3 million people without a single email, without a single letter, without a single word from me that it's time to go. 3 million people are going to be kicked out by their oppressors against their will. They don't want to leave yet. They don't even have food. Throws them out before they have a chance to bake their bread.
Right, so if we look at, they are over 400 years and we're living there as slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is this saying about, is this matzah, is this almost like a sign of a lazy people, of people who are not willing to
no,
pull themselves
it's with
up
haste.
On their bootstraps and...
It's with hay, they didn't have time. They didn't have time, they didn't think they were leaving at 12:05 a.m.
But I'm simply asking, where is our mentality that we would allow ourselves to live like that for that period of time without doing anything on our own? There's no way to answer.
There's a lot of talk about the slave mentality. There's been a lot of literature about that. People write about that. The desert, the slave mentality of the desert was adapting the Jewish life to one of a slave mentality to one of a free people. There's literature about that. I'm not prepared to say anything about it. But there are those who write about that idea.
So when Hashem said that there was going to be the 7-day holiday,
mm-hmm.
it was not clear that was going to happen right after the Pesach, right after the midnight.
I don't know that. I guess the people didn't realize it was going to happen at 12:05.
But regardless of if they knew that it was going to happen, they weren't going to be able to eat chametz for that.
Okay. Now that the Gemara says clearly that the Jewish people in Egypt did not have a 7. In other words, that was going to be l'doro sechem. That was going to be for future generations. The prohibition of chametz was only one day in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. So the 7 day was
one
be
day. Now there's this fascinating machlokas which we didn't get to. Many of the Mefarshim understand that the one day that was prohibited was the 14th in the afternoon and the night of the 15th. But immediately after, by daybreak already, then they wouldn't even have a prohibition of chametz. So they should have been baking chametz to eat. They also did not have the prohibition of seeing it. They only had a prohibition of eating it. So they should have been baking provisions for the following day when it would be permitted already. And that's where the haste came in. They didn't even have time to make those provisions. All right.
This is wonderful.
Great.
Wonderful.